Before I forget, I cannot be at Sheerton tonight, and I apologize.
Fine.
So perhaps let Abraham Wellens know so he can record it, or someone else can record it.
Okay, so we're being recorded?
Yes.
Okay, so we're in the middle of a fascinating, quite dramatic, somewhat puzzling story. So the story thus far is that Rabban Gamliel was removed from his post as the Nossi. Why was he removed? Because of the argument that he had with Rabbi Yeshua. In his place, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was appointed, even though he was only 18 years old at the time, but a miracle occurred, he looked older than he was. On that day, on the day that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah became appointed, the rules of the Beis HaMedrash changed, and everybody was allowed in, as opposed to in the time of Rabban Gamliel, only those who were toichoi kabaroi. Inside was the same as the outside. Now, the rules have changed, and everybody who wanted to come and learn was allowed to learn. And indeed, the Gemara says there was a huge influx of Talmidim, hundreds of extra Talmidim filled the Beis HaMedrash, 400 or 700. Rabban Gamliel was very disappointed, was very concerned. Look how many extra Talmidim are learning, and I was the cause, perhaps, of them not learning in the first place, because I appointed a shomer, a guard, to be there at the door, not to allow people in, and look how many people, look how many Talmidim are now learning Torah. So we saw he had this dream that tried to appease him, although the Gemara said it wasn't quite true. Either way, there ensued a phenomenal ribui of limud Torah. As you can imagine, the Beis HaMedrash is now full of these balei trisim, of tanoim, and the Gemara says that the pilpul chaverim was such that every single halacha was discussed, nothing was left hanging, every sofik was resolved. So we began one of the shailas. Let's now look at the first, it's not the narrow lines, it's not the wide lines, it's the medium lines, the tanan. Because at the end of the very last narrow line, it says, Va'af Rabban Gamliel, even Rabban Gamliel, Loi mona atzmoi mi Beis HaMedrash. He did not refrain, did not withhold himself from attending the Beis HaMedrash, afilu shoa achas, even for a moment, which when you think about it, is the most incredible thing. Here, Rabban Gamliel has just been deposed from his nasius, and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah already on the first day has changed all the rules of the Beis HaMedrash, and you would have thought maybe that Rabbi Gamliel would want to steer clear to the contrary. He didn't want to miss part of the action, the tremendous ribui in Limud Torah. The Tanan, so we have a Mishnah, this Mishnah is in Masechtas Yodayim, and as we see that Rabban Gamliel was involved in the story, so clearly he was there in the Beis HaMedrash. It says there, the Tanan, Boi Bayoim, on that day, which day? That day where hundreds of extra Talmidim were allowed in the Beis HaMedrash. Bo Yehuda Geir Amoini Lefnehem BeBeis HaMedrash. There was this person called Yehuda, he was an Amoini convert, and he came to them in the Beis HaMedrash, and he said to them, one second, what's my status? Omar Lahem, he said to them, Ma ani lovoi bekohol. Can I enter the kohol? Am I allowed to join Klal Yisrael? Or am I excluded as a result of being an Amoini? Omar Lahem Rabban Gamliel, so we see Rabban Gamliel was clearly there, and that's why the Gemara brought this story. Rabban Gamliel immediately responded, and he said, Osur ato lovoi b'kohol. It's absolutely osur for you to enter the kohol because, as you yourself suggest, you're an Amoini. An Amoini may not enter Klal Yisrael. As we mentioned last time, this is of course very much in Yonah D'Yoma, because that was the very unclear halacha at the time of Dovid HaMelech being appointed the king. There were those who debated his whole lineage, that one second, he's a great-grandson of Rus, and Rus, albeit not from Amon, she's from Moav. How can a Moavi woman possibly join Klal Yisrael? And if she can't, then Dovid HaMelech, no, not only is he not fitting to become the king, but he's not even Jewish. It's quite astounding. It's literally mind-blowing to think that Dovid HaMelech, Unzra Dovid HaMelech, wrote Sefer Tehillim. There were literally doubts about whether he was a Jew or not. Until, as we know, the Gemara famously tells us that no, there was a drosha, that only males of Moav and Ammon cannot join Klal Yisrael, but females can. Moavi v'loy Moavis, Ammoni v'loy Ammonis, and on that basis, Rus is allowed to join Klal Yisrael, and in turn, Dovid HaMelech is indeed therefore Jewish. Either way, this person, Yehuda, mentioned in our Gemara, being a male member of Ammon, so Rabban Gamliel said to him, if that's the point, then obviously, Asur Ato Lavoi Bekohol, you cannot possibly enter Klal Yisrael. Omalei Rabbi Yeshua, now we have to remember, of course, there's a lot of history between Rabban Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua. In particular, the story that we learned in the beginning of our sugya, the whole machlokes, whether Arvis is a Roshus or a Chayva, the Gemara made mention of other previous arguments they had. So it seems to be they are always the Balei Machloikas, as it were, having Machloikas together la halacha. So Omalei Rabbi Yeshua, no, Muta Ata Lovoi B'Kohol. You are indeed allowed to enter the Kohol. Now, how can that be? Omalei Rabban Gamliel V'Haloi Kvar Nehemar. But surely it is written in the Torah, Loi Yavoi Amoini Umoi Avi Bekal Hashem. What's going on? Have you forgotten the posuk in the Chumash? How on earth can you permit this Yehuda to join Klal Yisrael? But we know he's from Amoin, and Amoin can't join Klal Yisrael. What's going on over here? Omalei Rabbi Yeshua V'chi Amoin Umoyov Bimkoimon Hein Yoishvin? Question mark. Do you think Amoin and Moav settled and remained settled in their place? In other words, Amoin, of course, is a country. Moav is a country. Do you think those countries, all their inhabitants, remain settled there? It's not true. Kvar Olof Sancheirev, Melech Ashur. Sancheirev, the king of Ashur, has already risen. Ubil Baal Eskol Ha'umois. And he has been mevalbel, means he's mixed up. If you look in the Navi, it says that he conquered all before him, and he literally picked up nations from one country, deposited them elsewhere. He picked up a second nation, put them in the first. Everybody got mixed up, which means that nobody remained, or close to nobody remained, bimkoimon. Such that if you go to Amoin or Moav, even though that country is called that, but there's no need anymore to assume that those who live there are of Amoini or Moavi descent. Shenemar, it says, Vasir Gvuloi Samim, Vasiroi Seyem, Sheiseisi, Vaoirid, Ka'abir, Yoishvim. That's the Pasuk in Yeshaya that indicates to us that Sancheirev was Mevalbel the Umois, mixed up all the nations, and as you can imagine, halachically, that had phenomenally large ramifications. Now we have a principle, behold the Porish, Meruba Porish. What's the literal translation? Because this is where we left off last time. What's the literal translation of behold the Porish, Meruba Porish? So as we know, the Torah teaches us the principle of following the majority. We have a principle called Roiv. But it's very important to know that Roiv manifests itself in different ways. And we all rely on Roiv the whole time. For example, tomorrow night, Friday night, when we make our Kiddush, Be'ezus Hashem, the mitzvah is to drink the kos. Now the mitzvah essentially is to drink the entire kos. If, however, you drink Roiv of the kos, so we have a principle called Ruboi Kakuloi. The majority is like whole. If you drink roiv of the kois, that essentially is as if you have drunk the whole kos. There is, however, a completely different manifestation of roiv, and that's called kol de porish meiruba porish. What's that case? So that's the famous case in the Gemara when you have 10 shops all selling meat. 9 of them are selling kosher meat, and one of them is selling non-kosher meat. And we find in the street, in front of this row of stores, we find a piece of meat. And we have absolutely no way of knowing which store this piece of meat came from, because they all look the same, the pieces of meat. So here we have the principle of roiv. Kol de porish. What does porish mean? Porish means to separate. Anything that's been separated, meruba porish. You can assume that it got separated from the roiv, meaning which store did this piece of meat separate from? Did it emerge from? The principle of roiv tells me that you're allowed to assume that it came from one of the 9 kosher shops as opposed to the single non-kosher shop. Now, even though we call that roiv, we also call drinking roiv of my kiddush cup roiv, but as we all understand, that's two very different types of manifestations of roiv. In the case of the 10 stores, I have a number of different items in front of me, and the meat, meaning the stores, and the meat is assumed to have come from the roiv. When you drink your roiv of your cup on Friday night, nobody there is dealing with something that has emerged, something that has emerged for a number of different items, and we say that it emerges from the roiv. Nothing has emerged from anywhere. Rather, you have one single solitary kos in front of you. If you drink roiv, then the drinking of the roiv is considered a drinking of the entire kos, and that's the principle of ruboi kakuloi. But that's not kol de porish mi ruboi porish. Kol de porish mi ruboi porish is a different principle, where you have a number of different items, not like one kos. You have a number of different items. When I find something now, I'm allowed to assume that it emerges from the roiv. Another example. When you shecht an animal, as we know, you have to shecht what's called the simonim. What are the simonim of the animal? The veshet and the konah, the windpipe and the airpipe. Now, essentially, you have to shecht them in its entirety. And what happens if you only cut roiv? You don't cut, you don't slice the entire veshet or konah, you cut roiv. The halacha is ruboi kakuloi. That's not the same as kol de porish me ruba porish. That's more like the one single solitary Friday night kiddush cup, where whatever you do to roiv of it is considered as if you've done to all of it. But what we're discussing in our Gemara, the case of the 10 shops, that's not one item in which we say that the roiv of it gives the status to all of it, but rather when you have a number of different items and one has emerged, we assume it emerges from the roiv. So back to our case now. We have this Yehuda who turns up in the Beis HaMedrash and he claims that he comes from Amoin. So in former times, when Amoin was inhabited and settled, there would be no question whatsoever. If you're from Amoin, you can't possibly join Klal Yisrael. What Rabbi Yeshua was maintaining was that this is not former times. Everybody has been mixed up such that most people in Amoin are actually not Amoinim at all. This is the classic case of 10 stores. So in Amoin, I have a whole bunch of people of which most are not Amoini. So, kol de porish. Anybody who separates from what? From Amoin, we assume that he comes from the roiv. And what does that mean, the Roiv? Because Roiv people in Amoin are in fact not Amoinim. How can that be? Because Sancheirev was Mevalbal everybody. And that's what it means. Kol the Porish, Meiruba Porish. So that was Rabbi Yeshua's claim against Rabban Gamliel. Rabban Gamliel, you're assuming that it's a Dovar Poshut. That because he's an Amoini, he cannot join Klal Yisrael. Well, of course you're all right. Of course you're correct. If he is indeed an Amoini, he can't join Klal Yisrael. But my whole claim is that he's not an Amoini. How do I know? I don't know. But based on the principle of Roiv, I'm allowed to assume that he's not an Amoini. Because the chances are, the Roiv chances are that he is not an Amoini, even though he comes from Amoin. As I mentioned before, I don't want to discuss the halachas of Roiv now, but Roiv is a principle that we base ourselves on, we use every single day. I don't want to scare you or anything, but any piece of meat that you buy from the store, it can come with the best hechsher in the world. But that's Eid Charedis. There is definitely a chance that that meat is Vadai Trefa. The Mishnah tells us there's 18 different type of trefas. Do you know how many they check for? One, maybe two. They check for holes in the lungs. In the case of chickens, they check for other trefas. Most trefas are not checked for. 16, at least, out of 18 trefas are not checked for. So how can you eat your meat? The answer is because Roiv behemois ksheirois. Most animals in the world are kosher. So you'll ask me, if Roiv animals of the world are kosher, so why do we need to check for any trefas then? Even a hole in the lung, isn't it true to say that statistically Roiv animals do not have a hole in their lung? The answer is it's absolutely correct. But because it's easy to check, and because there is what's called a miut hamotsui, the statistics there are quite high, even though it's not a roiv, therefore we do check. But basically, most trefes are not checked for because we are relying on roiv. So that's just one example out of many how the principle of roiv is a principle that we rely on every day of our lives. So back to our story. Omar Lo Rabban Gamliel. So Rabban Gamliel was the one who said, you cannot join Klal Yisrael. Rabbi Yeshua said, you can join Klal Yisrael because based on the principle of Roiv, it is safe to assume that he's actually not an Amoini, even though he lives in Amoin. Omar Lo Rabban Gamliel. V'haloi kvarnema. But surely it says, there's another pasuk in Yirmiyah. It says, V'achareichein, after that, Oshiv Shavus Bnei Amoin Naum Hashem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises that Amoin will be restored. So, whilst I don't disagree with you that initially Amoin were scattered all over the show, so that most people in Amoin, Alpi Roiv, are not Amoinim, but there is a promise from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that they'll all be returned. And if that's the case, V'kvar Shavu. Surely they've all returned. So it might be true that at one stage, most people living in Amoin were not Amoinim, but now they all are because they've all come back home. Says the Gemara, Omaloi Rabbi Yeshua. So Rabbi Yeshua says back in return, it's not true, because I have a counter-posuk. V'haloi kvar nemar. It also says, the posuk in Omois, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises that he'll return Klal Yisrael as well. It says, V'shavti yeshvus ami Yisrael. And guess what? V'adayin loy shavu. And they have not returned. So just because you managed to quote me a posuk that says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises he'll return Amoin, that's of no halachic consequence. Because he also promised that Klal Yisrael will be returned, and Be'ezras Hashem it will happen, but it hasn't happened yet. So therefore I've got no good grounds to assume that it's happened to Amoin either. In which case, we're back to square one. Amoin were all mixed up, and based on the principle of Roiv, it surely is no problem to allow him to join Klal Yisrael. This is what Rabbi Yeshua argued back to Rabban Gamliel, and indeed, says the Gemara, Miyad hitiruhu lovoi bakal. And indeed, they allowed him immediately to enter Klal Yisrael because Rabbi Yeshua had proven his point decisively, that we follow the Roiv, Kol the Porish, Meilu the Porish, and therefore he is allowed to come back to Klal Yisrael. I remember, by the way, when I learned in the Mir Yeshiva, in the Shir of my Rebbe, Rebbe Fol Shmulevitz, Zecher Tzadik Levrocha, he always used to point out to us that whilst we're so used to the principle of Roiv, never make the mistake of thinking that Roiv is a Svara. Do not think that Roiv is just a merely logical principle and it's the most obvious thing in the world. For example, if I have three pieces of meat in front of me, two of them are kosher, one of them are not, so you may eat the piece of meat because you can assume from the Roiv that it's kosher. So what are you going to say? Of course, it's obvious, it's logical. Statistically, after all, it's a 1 in 3 chance that I'm going to eat treif, and it's a 2 in 3 chance that it's kosher. So we always used to tell us, would you do the same if I told you that one of those pieces of meat had just been poisoned with a lethal poison? If I offered you 3 pieces of meat, and I said to them, here, take this delicious meat, by the way, one of them has just been injected with lethal poison, you would not calmly take one of the pieces of meat and say, well, I'm sure I'll be fine. I'll piroiv, I'll be okay. Or we used to give us the example, imagine you walk into a car store and you say, here, give me the best car you have in the store. No problem. And you enter the car that you've just paid $50,000 for. And the car salesman says to him, oh, by the way, I forgot to tell you, there's a 40% chance that this car doesn't work at all. So what will you say? Well, never mind. At least there's a 60% chance that it will work. No, nobody would follow Roiv in a principle in a situation like that. So you see that just because statistically one thing is more likely than the other, it doesn't mean that logic would dictate that you'd necessarily follow the Roiv. So therefore, the fact that halacha allows us to follow the Roiv is not just a merely logical svara, it is a tremendous chidush that the Torah enables us to do. And as we know, it's all based on the Beis Din. Because when somebody is coming to Beis Din, we go with the majority opinion in the Beis Din. So in a Beis Din of 23 Dayanim, 15 say one way and 8 say the other, we go with the Roiv. It's not a svara, it's a chidush ha-Torah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed us to follow in halachic questions, we follow the Roiv. This is not our subject now, launching into Roiv, but we know that there are many areas of halacha that in fact we don't follow Roiv. So again, it's not just a basic, simple logic. There are many issues of pikuach nefesh, for example, where we do not follow the Roiv. Imagine somebody on Shabbos is feeling unwell, and the doctor looks at him and says there's a 30% chance that he's undergoing a very serious heart attack. But there's a 70% chance that he's absolutely fine. What's the halacha? Of course, you machalal Shabbos. Why don't we say we follow the Roiv? And I'll be Roiv, 70% chance, he's absolutely healthy and well. We don't follow the Roiv. And there's other areas that we also don't follow the Roiv. So, Roiv, I have a sefer at home, by the way, 300 pages on the Inyan of Roiv. Roiv is an extremely complicated topic, but we have just touched upon it in our Gemara. So back to our story, Rabbi Yeshua has l'chaira proven his point. There's no need to assume that this Yehuda is a real Amoini. Because based on Roiv, the chances are that he's not an Amoini, and you're allowed to follow the Roiv. That's the Chiddush of the Torah. Says the Gemara, Omar Rabban Gamliel. So Rabban Gamliel, who has just now been disproven and defeated in this argument, Hoyel v'hochi hava, comma, since this is so, meaning, seeing as I've just lost out to Rabbi Yeshua and he has proven me conclusively wrong, Ezel, I will go, va'afaisei, and I will be mafayasim. What does that mean, I'll be mafayasim? I'll try to appease him. I have this long-standing machlekas with him. Our machlekas with regard to Arvis, is it a rashus or is it a chayva, was what eventually got me deposed. I had another machlekas with him just now, and he defeated me again. I think I better be mafayasim and appease him. Ezel v'afayse l'Rabbi Yeshua. So he says, I'm going to go and try and be Mephias, appease Rabbi Yehoshua. Very strange continuation to this story. Ki moto, when he reached Lebeise, when he reached the house of Rabbi Yeshua, Chazina, he saw Ashisa the Besa, as Rashi is about to tell us, the walls, Ashisa is the walls. He saw that the walls of Rabbi Yeshua's house, the Mashcharon, from the word Shochar, they'd all become blackened, charcoaled. Says Rashi, La Ashisa de Besa de Mashcharon, he saw that Koisle Besoi Shel Rabbi Yeshua, he saw that the walls of the house of Rabbi Yeshua, Shahoyu, Shechayrois, were all blackened. Omale, back into the Gemara. So, Rabban Gamliel, having seen the state of Rabbi Yeshua's walls, says to him, Mikoisle Beischa, by looking at the walls of your house, Atonikar, if you are recognized, Shepachmi ato. What does Shepachmi ato mean? Pachmi is a charcoal, a blacksmith. Says Rashi, Shepachmi ato oisa pachomim. Pachomim is sparks or charcoal. I see that you're a charcoal merchant or a blacksmith. Yesh oimrim nafach. Nafach is indeed a blacksmith. Obviously, he meant this in a critical or condescending way, because clearly to be a blacksmith was considered a very lowly task. And he says, here, I come to your house and I see your house is all blackened. So clearly your profession is a blacksmith, a very, very lowly job. Amalei, Sir Rabbi Yeshua responded, Oi, woe, loy, ledoir, woe to the generation, Sha'ata Paranasai, that you are its leader. Rabban Gamliel, although no longer the leader, but certainly was initially, woe to the nation that has Rabban Gamliel as a leader. In other words, how can you speak like this? She'i ata yoideya, you have no idea, b'tza'aron shel Talmidei Chachomim, about the difficult life of Talmidei Chachomim, Bameheim misparnasim, how they sustain themselves, ubameheim nizoinim, and how they are fed. In other words, Rabban Gamliel, this is important to know, Rabban Gamliel came from very autocratic, came from aristocracy, came from Malchus, as we'll see soon in the Gemara. He came from Malchus, and therefore certainly was not used to seeing Talmidei Chachamim as a blacksmith, to which Rabbi Yeshua was responding very sharply, you do not know how Talmidei Chachamim live. Talmidei Chachamim, who have no obvious income, business source, have to sometimes resort to very lowly, maybe degrading jobs in order to sustain themselves. Omar Leoi, so he said to him, Na'anesi Lecha, I listen to you. I understand. You're quite right. Mechoil li, please forgive me. Rabban Gamliel was requesting of Rabbi Yeshua, please forgive me. Mm-hmm. However, Loi Ashkach Bei. Rabbi Yeshua did not respond. He didn't say that he's not being Moichel, but neither did he say that he is. So he tried again, and he said, Asei Bishvil Kvoid Abo. If you're not going to forgive me, at least forgive me for the sake of my esteemed father. At that stage, peace. Rabbi Yeshua completely was appeased, and he completely forgave Rabbi Gamliel. Ah, so this has big ramifications now. Why does it have big ramifications? Because Rabbi Gamliel was only ever deposed from his position based on the argument he had with Rabbi Yeshua. And out of kovod for Rabbi Yeshua, they deposed Rabban Gamliel. They didn't appoint Rabbi Yeshua in his place because we saw in the previous Gemara they didn't want to appoint the Baal Maisa. But ultimately, Rabban Gamliel only ever lost his position because of his argument with Rabbi Yeshua. And yet now, Rabbi Yeshua has been appeased. Well, if he's been appeased, maybe that now means that Rabban Gamliel can be reinstated. Says the Gemara. Omru, so they said, Man Nazel. So who should go? Velemelohu l'Rabbonon. Who should go and inform the Rabbonon of these latest developments in which Rabbi Yeshua has become appeased? So maybe that's a game changer. Maybe Rabbi Gamliel can now be reinstated. Who's going to tell the Rabbonon? Omar lohu hahu koivis. There was a koivis. A koivis means, from a lashon of kvis, of washing. There was somebody who was a washer, a cloth washer, who happened to be there, and he says, I volunteer. Ano azilna, I will go. I will go. Now, again, what was his task? His task was to go to the Beis HaMedrash, inform them that Rabbi Yeshua had been appeased, and if Rabbi Yeshua had been appeased, then surely Rabban Gamliel is the rightful Nasi after all, and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, who had been appointed in his place, he now in turn needs to be deposed in order to allow Rabban Gamliel to be reinstated. So what was the message they sent to the Beis HaMedrash? Sholach lohu Rabbi Yeshua lebei medrasha. So Rabbi Yeshua sent a message to the Beis HaMedrash with this koves. And what was the message that he was going to send? Rather cryptic. And he said, Man delovish mado. Mado is clothing. Man delovish mado. Whoever wears clothing, yilbash mado, should wear clothing. Uman deloy lovish mado. And whoever does not wear clothing, yeymar le, would he, question mark, would he say, leman delovish mado, to the one who does wear clothing, Shalach madcho, send me your clothes, va'ano albashe, and I will wear them? Question mark. What does that mean? Says Rashi. Delovish mado, horogil lilvoish hameil, the one who regularly, who is used to wearing the cloak, yilbash, he should wear the cloak. Kloima, what does that mean? Of course, this is all metaphoric. Horogil benasius yie nosi. I am the one, says Rabbi Yeshua, on behalf of Rabban Gamliel. Rabban Gamliel is the one who is rogil to be the nosi. He is the one, as it were, who wears the cloak. And the one who wears the cloak, wears the cloak. The one who does not wear the cloak doesn't send a message to the one who does, please give me your cloak. No. he leaves the one who's wearing it to wear it. Which, in other words, means let Rabban Gamliel, who is initially wearing the cloak a minute ago, let Rabban Gamliel, who was wearing the cloak, not be deposed, and let him continue to wear the cloak. That was the message that he sent to the Beis HaMedrash. So let's clock out, and then we'll rejoin. Recording. So this is the message that he sent to the Beis HaMedrash. The one who wears the cloak should continue to wear the cloak. Rabban Gamliel should be restored to his nesius. However, off he went, this washer, to the Beis HaMedrash to convey the message. Omar lohu Rabbi Akiva lerabbonon. Rabbi Akiva, who was in the Beis HaMedrash, said to the Rabbanon, Tzroiku Gali. Shut the door. Lock the door. Don't let him in. Why? Deloi Lesu Avdei de Rabban Gamliel. We do not want the slaves of Rabban Gamliel, like this washer, Veletza'aroi le Rabbanon, to distress the Rabbanon, the Talmidim, and the Beis HaMedrash. In other words, They obviously expected Rabban Gamliel to send a message to the Beis HaMedrash, which is exactly what was happening. And Rabbi Akiva was telling the Talmidim, don't let them in. They weren't so keen, apparently, to restore Rabban Gamliel to his former position. However, Omar Rabbi Yeshua at that stage said, well, if the Shliach can't get in, I better take care of things myself. Mutav, it is better, the Eikum, that I will stand up, the Ezel Ano, and I will go, le Gabaihu, to them. If they won't let in the slave, the washer, they surely will let me in. Also, so he went, Toraf Abova. He knocked, Toraf means to knock, Abova on the door. He knocked on the Beis HaMedrash door, where the Rabban and the Talmidim are waiting. Omalei, and he said again, a cryptic message. Mazeh. What's a mazeh? Mazeh is from the hazor, the sprinkling. We know that the Koyanim were the ones who were responsible to sprinkle the ash of the Pora Adumo on those who had become Tomei. And Rabban Gamliel had Kohuna lineage. So Rabban Gamliel, who Rabbi Shua is trying to reinstall, is a mazeh. Says the Gemara, Omalei, so the message he sent was, mazeh ben mazeh, the one who sprinkles the afer, is the son of another mazeh. Yazeh, he should be the one who continues to do this hazor, this sprinkling. Which is, of course, another way of saying that Rabban Gamliel should continue in his post. V'she'enoi, and the one who isn't, loy mazeh v'loy ben mazeh, the one who is neither a sprinkler nor the son of a sprinkler, this is obviously a reference to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, he can't say, Yoima, is he going to say, Lamazeh ben Mazeh? Is he going to say to the sprinkler, the son of the sprinkler, Meimecha, your water is Meimara? What's Meimara? Meimara is cave water. We know that when somebody becomes Tomei Meis, he's got to be sprinkled. With what? With a certain type of ash, dipped in a certain type of water. Which water? Mayim Chayim. Water that comes from a spring. Not water that's to be found in a puddle in a cave. So too, a certain type of ash. It's got to be the ash of para aduma, not just the ash taken out of your oven. So, will the one who's not a sprinkler, neither is he the son of the sprinkler, will he turn round to the sprinkler, the son of the sprinkler? In other words, will Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah turn round to Gamliel and tell him that your water is merely cave water? Meaning that you're not really eligible for the job? And so too will he tell him the Efer Cho, Efer Maklo, that your ash is just oven ash? Is that what he's going to tell him? It's just oven ash? No. It's pure water, it's the correct water, and it's the correct ash. So, of course, it's all metaphoric. But what he was trying to tell him was that Rabbi Gamliel is the rightful Nasi. And he comes from Kohuna, and his father also comes from Kohuna. And it's therefore incorrect for Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, who does not have that same lineage, to be turning round to Rabbi Gamliel, claiming that he's more eligible than him. That can't possibly be. Omalei Rabbi Akiva. So Rabbi Akiva turns round and he says to Rabbi Yeshua, and he says, Rabbi Yeshua, nispayasto, I see that you've become appeased. Look what's happening. Unbelievable. The one who is initially mocked and derided by Rabbi Gamliel is the very one coming back to claim that Rabbi Gamliel should be reinstalled, to be reinstated. So I see that clearly you've been appeased. By the way, we missed out a couple of Rashis. Let's just have a look at Rashis. Mazeh ben Mazeh, Koyein ben Koyein. A Koyein, the son of another. Yazeh es Meichatos, he's the one who sprinkles the Meichatos, which is the Pora Aduma water. Efer makle means Efer hakolui betanurim ubekirois. It is merely ash which has become burned in a different types of oven. Kloimar, what that means is Efer stam. It's stam Efer as opposed to Pora Aduma Efer. Okay, back into the Gemara on the last medium line. Omale Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Yeshua, I see that nispayasto. I see that you've become appeased. Klum osinu, we did nothing, elo bishvil kvoid cho. We only ever deposed Rabbi Gamliel out of respect for you, Rabbi Yeshua. In other words, this story is such an incredible story, how it's taken a complete 180-degree turn. Rabbi Yeshua was the one who was initially distressed by Rabbi Gamliel. Based on that, the Talmidim, the Rabbonon, deposed Rabbi Gamliel. And now it's that very Rabbi Yeshua who's coming back begging and claiming that Rabbi Gamliel needs to be reinstated. So Rabbi Akiva says, fine. That's absolutely fine with us. You should know. We only ever deposed him in the first place in your honor, because we stood up for your honor, because you are the one who was distressed. But if you yourself are coming back to claim that Rabbi Gamliel should be reinstated, then indeed, so be it. So how are we going to do this? Lemochor ani v'ato. So tomorrow, me and you, Nashkim Lepischoi, we're going to get up early, we're going to go to his door, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and we're going to have to somehow break the news to him that the Nasius is going back to Rabbi Gamliel. Omri, they said, Heichi Na'avid. How exactly should we do this? We're just going to dump him unceremoniously? Gemiri, but we have learned Malin Bakoidesh Ve'ein Moiridin. What does Malin Bakoidesh Ve'ein Moiridin means? That in matters of Kedusha, you always have to upgrade, not downgrade. And therefore, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah certainly had some Milos that Rabbi Gamliel didn't. And if you now depose Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, in favor of Rabban Gamliel, that's not necessarily an upgrade. That may be considered as a downgrade. So we can't just completely get rid of Rabban Elazar ben Azaria. We're going to have to come to some sort of compromise. Nidroish, Mar, Choda, Shabta. If one of them will give the drosha on one Shabbos, Umar Choda Shabta, and the other one, the other Shabbos, so it's equal, is Osu Lekanuye. So there'll be jealousy. You put me on par with the other, one Shabbos each. Elo Lidroi Shimon Gamliel, Tolosi Shabti. We're going to have to almost reinstate Rabban Gamliel completely. We're going to give him three Shabbosos, Rabban Elazar ben Azaria, Choda, Shabta. And that way there will not be jealousy, meaning Rabban Gamliel will not be jealous of Rabban Elazar ben Azaria, who is his junior, because to the contrary, we've given three out of four Shabbosos to Rabban Gamliel and just one out of four to Rabban Elazar ben Azaria. Vahainu da Omar Mar. And this is what is meant when occasionally you find in the Gemara it says, Shabbos shall mi hoisa shall Rabban Elazar ben Azaria hoisa. This is a reference to a Gemara in Chagiga. The Gemara in Chagiga talks about a particular story where it says, whose Shabbos was it? And the answer came back, it was Rabban Elazar ben Azaria's Shabbos. What does that mean? The answer is, it's the result of the story that we've just now learned. Because Rabban Elazar ben Azaria did not give the Shabbos drosha on a regular basis. To the contrary, on most Shabbosos, it was Rabban Gamliel. And that's what the Gemara means. Whose Shabbos was this? And the answer is, it was Rabban Elazar ben Azaria's. That's why it needed to be pointed out, because it wasn't his Shabbos every week. Says the Gemara in conclusion, the very last line, V'oisoi Talmid. And that Talmid, which Talmid, was Rav Shimon ben Yechai Hava. Which Talmid? Says Rashi, all the way back to the beginning of the story. Do you remember how the beginning of the story went? The beginning of the story was that a Talmid came into the Beis HaMedrash and said, Is Mariv a Rashus? Is Mariv a Choyva? We can finally disclose the identity of that Talmid. Says Rashi, V'oisei Talmid she'sho'al. He was the one who asked, Tfilas Arvis, is it Rashus or Choyva? You should know it was Rabban Shimon ben Yechai. He was the one who launched the whole story. So it is a quite phenomenal story, very dramatic this, with twists and turns all the way. We should just say in conclusion, because we have just a minute or two left, that we say at the end of davening, Talmidei Chachomim Marbim Shalom Beinehem. Talmidei Chachomim are the great proponents of Shalom. And at face value, that seems very strange. Talmidei Chachomim are involved all day long arguing. Every daf in Shas has a machloikas in it. So it doesn't really exactly sound like shalom. And the answer is that shalom doesn't mean you don't disagree. Shalom is one of the most mistranslated words. In English, it's translated as peace. That's not what shalom really means. The true definition, when we talk about a couple having shalom bayis, what does that mean? Peace? That there's no disagreement ever? There's no argument? Why can't they disagree? To the contrary, it's a very healthy thing. One has a disagreement, and eventually the emes will emerge. The real translation of shalom, I think the best translation of shalom is not peace, but rather is harmony. If you have an orchestra, and every member of the orchestra is playing something different, are we going to call that an argument, a lack of peace? To the contrary, if they were all doing the same thing, I think Rabbi Yoel David would agree, it would be boring to listen to. It's precisely because each one is playing their role that brings about shalom. They harmonize each other because, in fact, they're not doing the same thing. And that eventually brings out the beautiful sound of that particular piece. Talmidei Chachamim who disagree are, in order to harmonize with each other, to emerge with the Emes. If they would always agree with each other, then the Emes would never emerge. Because I'd feel bad to argue with you, and whatever you maintain, I just have to agree. Why? That might not be the Emes of Torah. Talmidei Chachamim marbim shalom ba'olam does not mean that they don't disagree. To the contrary. Because they disagree, that's why there's shalom b'nehem. Because they disagree, and of course, as we know, the Mishnah tells us in Oveis that their machlekas is l'shem shamayim, that is the ultimate shalom. That's shalom, that's complete, that brings about the emes and the harmony of the Torah. So when you see a story like this, with great gedolei olam, tanoim, each one is like a malach elokim, speaking in very sharp terms in one direction and another, this is not chas v'shalom to be understood or misunderstood as some personal attack, a disagreement for the sake of disagreeing. Rather, it's a disagreement leman hashalom in order to produce the emes of Torah. And that's what it means. Talmidei Chachamim marbim shalom ba'olam. It doesn't mean they don't argue. It doesn't mean they don't disagree. It means they disagree for the sake of bringing out the emes, and that is the ultimate shalom.
Rav, with that understanding, this sugya still casts somewhat of a negative light on Rav Gamliel.
Correct.
In terms of how he treated his fellow Talmid Chacham.
If you look, it's very fascinating. The Chofetz Chaim, as we know, has a whole sefer on Hilchos Lashon Hara, and at the back he has a tshuva, he prints there in the name of the Chavos Yair. The Chavos Yair is one of the great Achreinim who lived about 250 years ago or so. And the Chavos Yair poses your question, and he says, why is it that you see in a number of places in the Gemara that the Tanoim or the Amoraim addressed each other, and it seems to be in very, very sharp terminology? Very, very, very sharp. We find some extremely sharply worded comments here and there. And the Chavos Yair really goes through them. I don't know if he goes through them all, but to explain what was really meant. In other words, if they're taken and read at face value, meaning if we understood that they were said that the way that we might say them, yes, then indeed they're very, very unclear and unrosy pictures painted. It sounds like they were just throwing curses and comments, chas v'shalom, chas v'shalom. The Chavos Yair explains one by one in these very sharply worded conversations what was the moshel and what was the reference and what was the wording. But one thing is to be ensured, as the Mishnah tells us, that it was a machlekes l'shem shemayim, and that's why we're still studying this machlekes until our very day.
Sure.
Okay, so we'll hold it over here. Be'ezus Hashem will continue. I assume that the current setup over Zoom is still preferable for everybody?
Yes, very much so, because I won't be able to come otherwise.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes,
they're opening up the shuls today. The crowd's opening up today.
Still, I think it is the best platform for us for the near future.
Okay, so because we've returned to Koilo, and I hope probably we're going to open our base of Medrash for davening as well this Shabbos. Okay, but we'll definitely tell Shavuos, and then maybe after Shavuos as well. We'll keep it in its current format.
Okay.
And then
thank you very much.
Great, super. All right.
Okay, all the best.
Parsha Shir tonight.
Mitzvah Hashem 8:30.
Okay.
Shavuos.
Have a wonderful
day.